I know it's hard, and it hurts now, but your son is a gift to the gods, not a gift from them. That is why we would never ask that of them.
Why not? What harm could there be in asking? Surely there were enough in service to the gods that one boy would not upset the natural order of things. And besides, some exceptions had been made in the past. My brother was proof of that.
Many in the audience appeared rooted in shock, as if they could not believe the audacity of what was being asked. There were others, though, whose faces were soaked in sympathy and marked with anger. Their stares were fixed on the dais, on Duke and Duchess Tierman, and on me.
Please, I beg of you, I beg.
The father dropped to his knees, his hands folded as if in prayer. I gasped, my chest squeezing. I wasn't sure how it happened or why, but my control over my gift snapped and my senses opened. I sucked in a sharp breath as grief poured into me in icy waves. The potency shook my knees, and I could barely breathe around it. A moment later, I felt Victor's hand on my back, and I knew he was prepared to grab me in case I went to them. It took everything in me to stand there and do nothing. Tearing my gaze away from Mr. Tullis, I forced out deep, even breaths. My wide eyes roamed the crowd as I pictured a wall in my mind, one as great as the rise, so tall and thick that no one's pain could breach it. That had always worked in the past, and it worked now. The claws of sorrow loosened their grip, but my gaze snagged on a blonde man. He stood several rows back, his chin bowed, and much of his face obscured by the curtain of hair that fell forward. I felt something burning through the wall I'd built, but it didn't quite feel like anguish. It felt hot, like physical pain, but it was bitter tasting in the back of my throat, as if I'd swallowed acid. He had to be in pain, but unnerved, I closed my eyes and rebuilt the wall until all I felt was the pounding of my heart. After a few seconds, I was able to take a deeper, stronger breath, and finally, the strange sensation disappeared. I opened my eyes as the father pleaded,
"Please, we love our son," he cried. "We want to raise him to be a good man to—"
"He will be raised in the temples of Rahar and Ione, where he will be cared for while in service to the gods, as it has been done since the first blessing."
The Duke's voice brooked no argument, and the woman's sobs deepened.
"Through us, the gods protect each and every one of you from the horrors outside the rise, from what comes in the mist, and all we must do is provide them with service. Are you willing to anger the gods to keep a child at home? To grow old, or possibly sicken and die?"
Mr. Tullis shook his head, his face draining of all color.
"No, Your Grace, we would not want to risk that. But he is our son."
"That is what you ask, though,"
the Duke cut him off.
"In 1 month from his birth, you will give him to the high priests, and you will be honored to do so."
Unable to look at the tear-stricken faces any longer, I closed my eyes once more and wished I could somehow drown out the sounds of their heartbreak. However, even if I could, I wouldn't forget them. And truthfully, I needed to hear their pain. I needed to bear witness to it and remember. Serving the gods in the temples was an honor, but this was still a loss.
"Cease the tears," the Duchess implored. "You know that this is right, and what the gods have requested."
But this didn't feel right. What harm could come in asking for one child to remain at home with his parents, to grow, to live, and to become a useful member of society? Neither the Duke nor the Duchess would bend to grant such a simple favor.
How could anyone mortal be unmoved by the mother's pleas, her cries, and her husband's desolate hopelessness? But I already knew the answer to that. The ascended were no longer mortal. Chapter 10. I smothered a yawn as Tawny helped secure my veil in place, feeling like I hadn't gotten a moment of rest. My mind wouldn't shut down last night. I couldn't stop thinking about Melissa and Rylan, the threat of the Dark One, and what had happened with the Tulis family. The utter hopelessness that had drenched the mother's face as her husband had led her from the chamber haunted me, as did the audience parting and giving them a wide berth. It was as if their request had left the Tulises with an infectious taint. As they left, cradling their infant, their heartbreak had projected, becoming a tangible, lingering entity. But that wasn't the only part of this that preyed upon my mind. The look that had settled over Hawk's face as he watched the broken couple also kept resurfacing. Anger had hardened his jaw and pressed his lips into a firm, unyielding line. And he wasn't the only one in attendance who'd borne what could easily be construed as the mark of resentment. I thought of the blonde man I'd seen and what I'd felt from him. It had to be some form of pain, as that was the only thing I could feel from others. But it had reminded me of the anger that had settled into Hawk's features and in others. Men and women of different classes, who didn't look upon the Tulises with distaste, but had instead stared at the dais, unable to hide their displeasure and bitterness. Had some of them handed over third sons and daughters to the priests? Or would they soon be watching their second sons and daughters go to court after their rite? Had the Duke and Duchess noticed those stares? I doubted they did, but I was sure the royal guards had. As Victor had said, this was a time of unrest, and it was spreading. I didn't think all could be blamed on the dissenters. Some of the fault could be laid at the feet of the natural order of things, to the right, which was beginning to feel unnatural when extenuating circumstances such as the Tulis's plight were ignored. Could it be changed, the way things were done? That was another thing that had kept me awake. Surely the gods had enough sons and daughters to serve them. They had the entire kingdom. And maybe it could become a case-by-case basis when it came to those who served the gods at the time of their rite. Many parents were honored to have their children do so, and for some, a lifetime in servitude to the gods was a far better life than the one they would have had if they remained at home. Could I change the order of things once I returned to the capital, before I ascended? Did I have that kind of power? Surely I had more than the ladies and lords in wait, as I was the maiden. I could speak to the queen on behalf of the Tulises, and if I ended up returning from the gods as one of the ascended, I could continue petitioning for change. I could at least try, which was more than the Duke and Duchess were willing to do. That was what I'd decided before I'd finally drifted off to sleep, only to wake a few hours later to meet with Victor. "You sound like you need a nap," Tawny commented, as she secured the final chain of the veil. "If only I could do just that," I sighed. "I have no idea how you can't nap during the day." She stepped to my side, tucking the ends of the veil so the length fell down the center of my back. "Give me any comfy chair and you'll be out cold in minutes. It makes me so jealous." I slipped my feet into white slippers with all too thin soles. "Once the sun comes up, I can't sleep." "That's because you can't stand to be idle," she responded. "And sleeping requires a certain amount of idleness, which is something I excel at." I laughed. "We all have to be good at something." She shot me a look just before a sharp rap sounded, and then Victor's voice rang out. Heading for the hall door, I groaned, even though I had expected his arrival. I was due to meet with Priestess Analia for prayers, but in reality, the time was generally spent with the priestess criticizing everything from my posture to the wrinkles in my gown. "If you want to make a run for it, I'll tell Victor you jumped out the window," Tawny offered. I snorted. That would only buy me a 5-second lead time. "True." Tawny reached the door before me, all but throwing it open. The moment I saw Victor's face, I tensed. Deep grooves of tension bracketed his mouth. "What happened?" I asked.
"You've been summoned to meet with the Duke and Duchess," he announced,
and knots of dread formed. Tawny sent me a quick, nervous glance.
"What for?"
"I believe it has to do with who will replace Rylan," he said.
And instead of feeling relief like I knew Tawny did, given how her shoulders loosened, my unease grew.
"Do you know who?"
I followed him out into the hall. He shook his head, sending a lock of sandy blonde hair across his forehead.
"I haven't been told."
That wasn't exactly uncommon, but I would think that since Victor would be working closely with whoever replaced Rylan, he'd be one of the first to know.
"What about Priestess Analia?"
I asked, ignoring the raised brows that Tawny directed at me as she fell into step beside me. And yes, I was surprised that I was asking, since jumping out a window would almost be preferable to spending an afternoon listening to all the things that were wrong with me. But a bad, anxious feeling had taken root in my stomach.
"She's been advised that there will be no session this week," Victor answered. "I'm sure you're disappointed to hear that."
Tawny stifled a giggle as I stuck my tongue out at Victor's back. We made our way to the end of the otherwise vacant wing of the castle and headed to the narrow hallway that accessed the main staircase. The wide stone steps fed into a large foyer where servants dusted statues of Penelope and Rain. The 8-foot-tall limestone statues stood in the center of the circular space and were cleaned every afternoon. How there could even be a speck of dust or dirt on any part of the statue was beyond me. The foyer led to the front of the castle, where the great hall, sitting rooms, and atrium were located. However, Victor led us to the right of the statues, through the archway adorned with lush green garland. The large banquet table, designed to seat dozens, was cleared of all except for the golden vase in the center, containing several long-stemmed, night-blooming roses. Air catching in my throat, my gaze latched on to the roses as we skirted the table, walking toward one of the doors to the right that had been left ajar. The sight of the flowers, the scent, I could practically smell the blood. Tawny lightly touched my shoulder, drawing my attention. I exhaled, forcing a smile. Her worried gaze lingered as Victor opened the door to one of the Tearman's many office spaces in the castle, this one used for less intimate meetings. My gaze swept the room, and my heart stopped. It wasn't because the Duke sat behind his black-painted desk, his pale head bent, as he scoured whatever paper he held in his hand, nor was it because the Duchess stood to the right of his desk, speaking with Commander Jansen. What caused the reaction was the dark-haired young man standing beside the commander, dressed in black and armored in leather and iron. My lips parted as my heart tumbled all the way to the pit of my stomach, while Tawny came to a sudden stop, blinking rapidly, as if she'd just walked into the room to find one of the gods. Slowly, she looked over at me, and the corners of her lips turned up. She looked curious and amused, and I was sure if she could see my face, I likely looked like I was 5 seconds from bolting from the room. In that moment, I really wished I'd told her about Hawk and the Red Pearl. I couldn't think of another reason why Hawk would be here with the commander, but I desperately clung to the hope that Victor had been wrong, and it had nothing to do with Ryland's replacement. But what other reason could there be? A sudden new fear took root. What if Hawk had discovered that it was me at the Red Pearl? Oh my gods, that seemed improbable. But wasn't Hawk becoming my guard just as unlikely? My heart seemed to restart and was now in a race with itself. The Duke looked up from his paper, his coolly handsome face giving me no indication of what was about to occur.
Please, close the door, Victor.
The stately room stood out in too vivid detail as Victor moved to obey the request. The royal crest painted in gold on a white marble wall behind the Duke was blinding, and the bare walls were in stark contrast to the black chair rails that ran along the length and width of the room. There was only one chair besides the one the Duke sat in. It was a plush, cream-colored wingback chair that the Duchess usually occupied. The only other seating options were polished limestone benches placed in three neat rows. The room was as cold as the Duke, but it was far better than the chamber he usually preferred, the one I'd been summoned to far too often.
Thank you.
Tierman nodded at Victor, his smile close-lipped, as he lowered the paper to the desk. His black, fathomless eyes flicked to where I stood, just inside the door. His mouth tightened as he motioned me forward.
Please sit, Penelope.
Legs oddly numb, I forced myself to cross the short distance, wholly aware of Hawk's gaze tracking my every step. I didn't need to look to know that he watched. His gaze was always that intense. I sat on the edge of the middle bench, folding my hands in my lap. Tawny took the bench behind me, while Victor moved to stand to my right, so he stood between me and the commander and Hawk.
I hope you're feeling well, Penelope, the Duchess said as she sat in the chair beside the desk. Hoping that I was only asked simple yes and no questions, I nodded. I'm relieved to hear that. I was worried that attending the City Council so soon after your attack would be too much, she said.
For once, I was beyond grateful for the veil, because if my face were visible, there'd be no hiding how ridiculous that concern was. I'd been bruised, not seriously injured or shot through the chest with an arrow, as Rylan had. I would be fine. I was fine. Rylan would never be okay.
What happened in the garden is why we're all here.
The Duke took over, and muscles all along my neck and back began to tense.
With the death of...
His fair brow pinched as disbelief whirled through me.
What was his name?
He asked the Duchess, whose forehead creased.
The guard. Ryland Keel, Your Grace,
Victor answered before I blurted out his name. The Duke snapped his fingers.
Ah, yes, Ryan. With Ryan's death, you are down one guard.
My hands curled into fists. Rylan. His name was Rylan, not Ryan. No one corrected him.
Again,
the Duke added after a pause, a faint twist of his lips forming a mockery of a smile.
Two guards lost in 1 year. I hope this isn't becoming a habit.
He said it as if it were somehow my fault.
Anyway, with the upcoming rite, and as you draw closer to your ascension, Victor cannot be expected to be the only one keeping a close watch on you,
Tierman continued.
We need to replace Ryan.
I bit the inside of my cheek.
Which, as I'm sure you realize now, explains why Commander Jansen and Guard Flynn are here.
I might have stopped breathing.
Guard Flynn will take Ryan's place effective immediately,
the Duke said, confirming what I had already guessed the moment I walked into the room, but hearing him say it aloud was an entirely different thing.
I'm sure this is surprising, as he is new to our city and quite young for a member of the Royal Guard.
I was wondering exactly that, The Duke sounded like he, too, was questioning it.
There are several Rise guards in line to be promoted, and bringing on Hawk is no slight to them.
The Duke sat back, crossing one leg over the other.
But the commander has assured us that Hawk is better suited to this task.
I couldn't believe this was happening.
Guard Flynn may be new to the city, but that isn't a weakness. He's able to look at possible threats with fresh eyes.
Commander Jansen spoke up then, nearly parroting what Victor had said before.
Any number of guards would have overlooked the potential of a breach occurring in the Queen's gardens, not due to lack of skill.
Debatable, murmured the Duke.
The commander wisely continued without acknowledging the comment.
But because there is a false sense of security and complacency that often comes with being in one city for too long. Hawk does not have such familiarity.
He also has recent experience with the dangers outside the Rise.
The Duchess spoke and my gaze sharpened on her.
Your ascension is a little less than a year from now, but even if you're summoned sooner than expected, or at the time of your ascension, having someone with that kind of experience is invaluable. We won't have to pull from our huntsmen to ensure that your travel to the capital is as safe as possible. The dissenters and the Dark One are not the only things to fear out there, as you know.
I did know. And what she said made sense. There were fewer huntsmen, and not many guards were suited for travel outside the Rise. Those who were had to excel at killing. Wasn't that what Hawk had said he was really good at?
The possibility of you being summoned to the capital unexpectedly played a role in my decision,
Jansen said.
We plan trips outside the Rise at least 6 months in advance, and there could be a chance that when and if the Queen requests your presence in the capital, we'd have to wait for the huntsman to return. With Hawk being assigned to you, we would be able, for the most part, to avoid that situation.
The gods hated me.
And that wasn't exactly surprising, considering all the things I regularly did that were forbidden. Maybe they had been watching, and this was my punishment. Because how in the world did the commander not think a single Rise guard was better suited or qualified? Was Hawk that good?
My head moved then, without any command from my brain. I looked to where Hawk stood and found his gaze fixed on me. A shiver curled its way down my spine. He inclined his head in acknowledgement, and I swore there was a faint glimmer to his amber eyes, as if he were amused by all of this. But surely that had to be my paranoia.
As a member of the Maiden's personal royal guard, it is likely that a situation may occur where you will see her unveiled.
The Duchess's tone was soft, even a little sympathetic. And then it struck me. I knew what would occur now.
It can be distracting seeing someone's face for the first time, especially a chosen. And that could interfere with your ability to protect her. That is why the gods allow this breach.
For some reason, I'd been so caught up in fear of being discovered that I'd forgotten what had happened when Rylan was brought in to work with Victor.
Commander Jansen, if you will please step outside,
the Duke said, and my wide gaze shot to him. There was a smile on his face, one that was wholly pleased, and not at all forced and brittle. I didn't even realize the commander had left until the click of the door closing behind him jolted me.
You are about to bear witness to what only a select few have seen, an unveiled maiden,
Tierman announced to Hawk, but his gaze was centered on me, to where my hands trembled in my lap. A real smile appeared on his face, turning my stomach.
Penelope, please reveal yourself.
Chapter 11. There had been a handful of times in my life where reality felt more like a dream. The night I'd heard my mother's screams and my father's shouts to run was one of them. Everything had felt hazy, as if I was there but somehow disconnected from my body. My parents being slaughtered was far more serious and traumatizing than what was happening right now. Still, I was on the brink of possibly being discovered. And if Hawk told the Duke where I'd been? My mouth dried as a fist clenched deep in my chest. Perhaps there was some truth to what Victor had said about me wanting to be found unworthy. But even if that were true, I would want to be as far away from the Duke as possible, if and when that occurred. Hawk hadn't seen my full face the night at the Red Pearl, but he'd seen enough that it could trigger recognition. At some point, he was bound to figure it out, probably after he heard me speak. However, I hadn't considered that moment occurring here, in front of the Duke and Duchess.
Penelope?
The Duke's tone carried a thread of warning. I was taking too long.
We do not have all day.
Give her a moment, Dorian. The Duchess turned to her husband. You know why she hesitates. We have time.
I was not hesitating for the reason they believed, why the Duke smiled with such relish. Of course I was uncomfortable bearing my face, my scars in front of Hawk. Truthfully, though, that was the least of my concerns at the moment. But the Duke was probably internally screaming with twisted joy. The man absolutely loathed me. Dorian Tierman pretended that he didn't, that he thought I was this miracle born, a chosen, just like his wife believed, but I knew better. The time spent in his other office proved exactly how he felt about me. I wasn't sure what it was about me that he hated, but there had to be something. As far as I knew, he was at least somewhat decent toward the ladies and lords in wait, but me? He loved nothing more than discovering something that made me uncomfortable, only to then exploit it. And if I really wanted to make his day, I'd give him something to be disappointed in, a reason to continue his lessons. Face burning as if on fire, from anger and frustration more than embarrassment, I reached for the clasps along the chains at the same moment Tawny rose, nearly tearing them apart as I unhooked them. The veil loosened, and before it could fall, Tawny caught the sides and helped ease the headdress off. Cool air kissed my cheeks and the nape of my neck. I stared straight at the Duke. I wasn't sure what he saw in my face, but his smile faded and his eyes turned to shards of obsidian. His jaw clenched, and I knew I shouldn't, but I couldn't stop myself. I smiled. It was just a hint of a grin, one that probably wasn't noticeable to anyone but the Duke, but he saw it. I knew he did. I was sure I'd pay for it later, but at that moment, I didn't care. Someone shifted to my right, ending my epic stare-off with the Duke and reminding me that we weren't the only two in the room. He wasn't the only one looking at me. The right side of my face was visible to Hawk, the side that the Duke often said was beautiful, the side I imagined matched my mother's. Drawing in a shallow breath, I turned my head until I completely faced Hawk. No side profiles, no hiding or mask that covered the two scars. My hair was secured in a braid and then wrapped in a knot, so it too provided no curtain. He saw everything that had been bared at the Red Pearl, and then some. He saw the scars. I braced myself, just like the Duke knew I would, because deep down, whether Tierman knew why or not, Hawk's reaction would affect me. It would hurt more than it should, but I'd be damned if I'd let it show. Lifting my chin, I waited for the look of shock or revulsion, or even worse, pity,
I expected nothing less. Beauty was highly coveted and worshipped, flawlessness even more, because beauty was considered godlike. Hawk's golden gaze roamed my face, his stare so potent that it felt like a caress along the scars, my cheeks, then my lips. A shiver danced across my shoulders as his eyes came back to mine. Our gazes locked, held. The air seemed to be sucked from the room, and I felt flushed, as if I'd been sitting out in the sun for too long. I didn't know what I saw as I stared back at him, but there was no shock etched to his expression, no revulsion, and especially no pity. His face wasn't empty, exactly. There was something there, in his eyes and in the set of his mouth, but I had no idea what it was. But then the Duke spoke, his tone deceptively pleasant.
"She's truly unique, isn't she?"
I stiffened.
"Half of her face is a masterpiece,"
the Duke murmured, and my skin flashed cold and then hot as my stomach twisted.
"The other half, a nightmare."
A tremor coursed down my arms, but I kept my chin high and resisted the urge to pick up something, anything, and throw it at the Duke's face. The Duchess spoke, though saying what, I wasn't sure. Hawk's gaze remained fastened on mine as he stepped forward.
"Both halves are as beautiful as the whole."
My lips parted on a sharp inhale. I couldn't even look to see what the Duke's reaction was, though I was sure it was nothing short of cataclysmic. Hawk placed a hand on the hilt of his broadsword and bowed slightly, his gaze never once leaving mine.
"With my sword and with my life, I vowed to keep you safe, Penelope,"
he spoke, voice deep and smooth, reminding me of rich, decadent chocolate.
"From this moment until the last moment, I am yours."
Closing my bedroom door behind me, I leaned against it and exhaled raggedly. He'd said my name when he took his vow as my guard. Not what I was, but who I was. And that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. "With my sword and with my life, I vow to keep you safe, maiden the chosen. From this moment until the last moment, I am yours." That was how Victor had sworn his oath, as did Hannes, and then Rylan. Had the commander not informed Hawk of the correct words? I couldn't imagine he'd forget. The look on the Duke's face, once Hawk had straightened, could have set fire to wet grass. Tawny spun to face me, the pale blue gown she wore swishing around her feet.
"Hawk Flynn is your guard, Poppy."
"I know."
"Poppy!"
She repeated my name, practically shouting it.
"That,"
she pointed to the hall,
"is your guard."
My heart toppled over itself.
"Keep your voice down."
I peeled away from the door and took her hand, pulling her farther into the chamber.
"He's probably standing outside."
"As your personal guard," she stated for the third time.
"I know."
Heart thumping, I pulled her toward the window.
"And I know that this is going to sound terrible, but I have to say it. I can't contain it."
Her eyes were wide with excitement.
"It's a vast improvement."
"Tawny," I replied, slipping my hand free of hers.
"I know. I recognize that it was terrible, but I had to say it."
She pressed her hand to her chest as she glanced back to the door.
"He's quite exciting to look at."
"Indeed. And he's clearly interested in moving up the ranks." Her brows knitted as she turned back to me.
"Why would you say that?"
I stared at her, wondering if she'd paid any attention to what the Duke had said. Have you ever heard of a royal guard that young? Tawny's nose scrunched. No, you haven't. That's what befriending the commander of the royal guard will do for you, I pointed out, heart thumping. I cannot believe that there was no other royal guard just as qualified. She opened her mouth, closed it, and then her eyes narrowed.
You're having a very strange, unexpected reaction.
I crossed my arms. I don't know what you mean.
You don't? You've watched him train in the yard.
I have not. I totally had. Tawny cocked her head to the side.
I've been with you on more than one occasion as you watched the guards train from the balcony. And you weren't watching just any guard. You were watching him.
I snapped my mouth shut.
You seem almost angry about him being named your guard. And unless there's something you haven't told me, then I have no idea why.
There was a lot that I hadn't told her. The suspicion in her gaze grew as she studied me.
What haven't you told me? Has he said something to you before?
When would I have had a chance for him to speak to me? I said weakly.
As much as you creep around this castle, I'm sure there's a lot you overhear that doesn't actually require you speaking to someone.
She pointed out, and then stepped forward, her voice lowered.
Did you overhear him say something bad?
I shook my head.
Poppy?
The last thing I wanted was for her to think Hawk had done something wrong. That was why I blurted out what I did. Or maybe it was because I had to say something. I kissed him.
Her lips parted.
What? Or he kissed me, I corrected. Well, we kissed each other. There was a mutual kiss.
I get it, she shrieked, and then took a visible deep breath. When did this happen? How did this happen? And why am I just now hearing about this?
I plopped down in one of the wingback chairs by the fireplace. It was the night I went to the Red Pearl.
I knew it!
Tawny stomped her slippered foot.
I knew something else had happened. You were acting too weird, too worried about being in trouble. Oh, I want to throw something at you. I can't believe you haven't said anything. I would be screaming this from the top of the castle.
You'd be screaming it because you could. Nothing would happen to you but me.
I know. It's forbidden and all that.
She hurried over to the other chair and sat, leaning toward me.
But I'm your friend. You're supposed to tell your friends these kinds of things. Friend. I wanted so very badly to believe that we were, that we'd be that if she weren't bound to me. I'm sorry I didn't say anything. It's just that I've done a lot of things I shouldn't do, but this is different. I thought if I didn't say anything, it would, I don't know, go away? That the gods wouldn't know?
Tawny shook her head.
If the gods know now, they knew then, Poppy. I know,
I whispered, feeling terrible,
but I couldn't tell her why I'd kept it to myself. I didn't want to hurt her, and I sensed that this would. I wouldn't need my touch to know that. I'll forgive you for not telling me if you tell me what happened in very, very graphic detail, she said.
I cracked a grin, and then I did just that. Well, almost that. As I slowly unhooked my veil and draped it across my lap, I told her how I'd come about to be in the room with him, and how he thought I was Britta. I told her how he offered to do whatever I wanted, once he realized that I wasn't her, and that he'd asked me to wait for him to return. But I didn't tell her how he'd kissed me elsewhere. Tawny stared at me with more awe than even Agnes had when she realized I was the maiden.
Oh my gods, Poppy.
I nodded slowly.
I so wish you'd stayed.
Tawny, I sighed.
What? You can't say you don't wish you'd stayed, not just a little bit.
I couldn't say that. I bet you wouldn't be a maiden any longer if you had. Tawny!
What?
She laughed. I'm kidding. But I bet you'd barely be a maiden. Tell me, did you enjoy it? The kissing? I bit down on my lip, almost wishing that I could lie. Yes, I did.
Then why are you so upset that he's your guard?
Why? Your hormones must be clouding your rational thought.
My hormones are always clouding my rational thought, thank you very much.
I snorted. He's going to recognize me. He has to once he hears me speak, right?
I imagine.
What if he goes to the Duke and tells him that I was at the Red Pearl? That I allowed him to kiss me? And do more, but at this point the kissing would be bad enough. He has to be one of the youngest royal guards, if not the youngest. It's clear he's interested in advancement, and what better way to secure that than to gain the Duke's favor? You know how his favorite guards or staff are treated. They're practically treated better than those on the court.
I don't think he has an interest in gaining His Grace's favor, she argued. He said you were beautiful.
I'm sure he was just being kind. She stared at me, as if I'd just admitted to snacking on dog hair.
First off, you are beautiful. You know that.
I'm not saying that to fish for compliments. I know, but I felt the overwhelming need to remind you of such. She gave me a quick, broad smile. He didn't have to say anything in response to the Duke being a general ass. My lips twitched.
He could have just ignored it and proceeded on to the Royal Guard oath, which, by the way, he made sound like sex.
Yes, I admitted, thinking I wouldn't have realized that before the night in the Red Pearl.
Yes, he did. I almost needed to fan myself, just so you know. But back to the more important part of this development. Do you think he's already recognized you?
I don't know. I let my head fall back against the seat. I wore a mask that night, and he didn't remove it. But I think I would recognize someone in or out of a mask.
She nodded. I would like to think that I would, and I would definitely hope that a royal guard would.
Then that means he chose not to say anything. He hadn't said anything, as both Victor and he had escorted us to my chambers. Although he might not have recognized me, it was dimly lit in that room.
If he didn't, then I imagine he will when you speak, as you said. It's not like you can be completely silent every time you're around him, she stated.
That would be suspicious.
Obviously. And odd.
Agreed. I toyed with the chains on the veil.
I don't know.
Either he didn't, or he did and chose not to say anything. Maybe he's planning to lord it over my head or something.
Her brows slammed down. You're an incredibly suspicious person.
I started to deny that, but realized I couldn't. I wisely moved along. He probably just didn't recognize me. A weird mixture of relief and disappointment mingled with the thrill of anticipation. You know what?
What?
I don't know if I'm relieved or disappointed that he didn't recognize me, or if I'm excited that he might have. Shaking my head, I laughed.
I just don't know, but it doesn't matter.
What happened between us was one time only. It was just this thing. It can't happen again.
Sure, she murmured.
Not that I'm even thinking he'd want to do any of that again. Especially now that he knows it was me, if he does.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm trying to say is that it's not a thing to even consider. What he does with the knowledge is the only thing that matters. I finished with a nod. Tawny looked as if she were seconds away from clapping.
You know what I think?
I'm half afraid to hear it. Her brown eyes glimmered.
Things are about to get so much more exciting around here.
Chapter 12.
Early afternoon the following day, I sat in the airy, sun-drenched atrium with Tawny, and not one, but two ladies in wait, wondering how I'd ended up in this situation. My trips outside my chambers were always well-timed, especially when I came to the atrium, so no one but me would be in the room. When I arrived some 30 minutes ago, it was empty as usual. That had changed within minutes of sitting down and picking at the tiny sandwiches Tawny had confiscated from another room. Lauren and Daphina had arrived, and while I sat as I'd been groomed to do, hands clasped lightly in my lap, ankles crossed and feet tucked behind the ivory hem of my gown, I shouldn't be in the room. Not while the ladies in wait were present, since they'd cozied up to the table where Tawny and I had sat at. The situation could easily be construed as me interacting with them, which was one of the many things expressly forbidden by the priests and priestesses. Interaction was, in their words, too familiar. I wasn't interacting, though. I imagined I was the picture of well-bred serenity, or I could easily be mistaken for one of the statues of the Veiled Maidens. I may appear calm on the outside, but internally, I was nothing more than an exhausted, frazzled ball of nerves. Some of it had to do with the lack of any restful sleep the night prior. Well, to be honest, for the last several days. It was also partly due to the fact that I knew I was going to be blamed for Daphina's and Lauren's presence. I didn't even know if I was allowed to be in the atrium. It had never been an issue before, and no one had ever spoken to me about it. However, no one other than a stray servant or guard had ever shown up in the atrium while I'd been here before. They weren't the only reasons I was a mess of anxious, restless energy, though. The primary cause stood catty-corner from where I sat, hand braced on the hilt of his sword, amber-colored eyes constantly alert. Hawk. It was strange to glance over and see him standing there. And it wasn't just because it was usually Rylan who watched over these afternoon brunches Tawny and I sometimes took in the atrium. It was how different it was with Hawk being there. Normally, Rylan had stared out into the garden or spent the majority of the time speaking with one of the other royal guards who were nearby as he lingered just inside the entrance. Not Hawk. He found the one area in the room where he had a view of the entire brightly lit space and the gardens outside the atrium. Luckily, the windows didn't face the roses. Unluckily, I often found myself staring at the fountain of the Veiled Maiden. In just one day, it had become almost painfully evident how lax Rylan had gotten in terms of security. Granted, there hadn't been an attempt before, but he had softened. I hated even acknowledging that. It felt like a betrayal to do so. But that wasn't the only thing that made this brunch so very different from the ones before. Another thing that made it so different was the appearance of the two ladies in wait. I suspected that this was the first time they'd even been in the atrium since they arrived at Castle Tierman after their rites. Daphina, a second daughter of a rich merchant, fluttered a silk lilac-hued folding fan as if she were attempting to end the life of an insect only she could see. While the late morning sun poured in through the windows, the atrium was still cool, and I doubted Daphina had grown overheated between eating cucumber sandwiches and sipping tea. Beside her, Lauren, the second daughter of a successful trader, had all but given up on sewing the tiny crystals onto her mask that was to be worn during the upcoming rite, and had fully committed herself to watching every move the dark-haired royal guard made. I was confident she knew just how many breaths Hawk took in a minute. Deep down, I knew why I hadn't risen and left the room like I was supposed to, like I knew Tawny waited for me to do. I understood why I was so willing to risk censure for simply sitting and minding my own business. I was enthralled by the antics of the two ladies in wait. Lauren had already done several things to catch Hawk's attention. She'd dropped her pouch of crystals, which Hawk had gallantly assisted her in retrieving, while she pretended to be engrossed with a blue-winged bird hopping along the branches of a tree close to the windows. That had provoked Daphina to feign a faint, due to what I had no idea. Somehow, the neckline of her blue gown had slipped so far, I wondered how she managed not to fall out of it. I couldn't fall out of my dress if it was on fire. My gown was all flowing sleeves, tiny beads, and a bodice that nearly reached my neck. The material was far too thin and delicate for me to sheathe the dagger to my thigh. As soon as I could change into something else, the blade would be back where it belonged. Ever the gentleman, Hawk had escorted Daphina to the chaise and brought her a glass of mint water. Not to be outdone, Lauren had then swooned from a sudden inexplicable headache that she'd quickly recovered from once Hawk had brandished a smile, the one that showed the dimple in his right cheek. There'd been no headache, just as there'd been no faint. I'd opened up my senses out of curiosity and felt no pain or anguish from either of them, other than a thread of sadness. I thought that might be due to Melissa's death, even though neither spoke of her. "You know what I heard?" Daphina snapped her fan as she dragged her teeth over her lower lip, glancing toward Hawk. "Someone," she threw out the word and then lowered her voice, "has been a rather frequent visitor to one of those," her gaze flicked to me, "one of those dens in the city." "Dens?" Tawny asked, giving up pretending that they weren't there. Not that I could blame her. She was friends with them, and while the ladies in wait were well aware that they probably shouldn't be sitting with me, Tawny appeared just as entertained as I was by their antics. Daphina sent her a meaningful look. "You know the kind, where men and women often go to play cards and other games." Tawny's brows lifted. "You're talking about the Red Pearl?" "I was trying to be discreet." Daphina sighed, her glance darting pointedly in my direction. "But yes." I almost laughed at Daphina's attempt to shield me from the knowledge of such a place. I wondered what she'd do if she knew I'd been there.
"And what have you heard he does at such a place?"
Tawny nudged me with her foot under the table.
"I imagine he's there to play cards, right? Or do you..."
Pressing a hand to her chest, she slumped in her chair and sighed. A curl slipped free from the elaborate twist that was trying and failing to contain her hair.
"Or do you think he engages in other, more illicit games?"
Tawny knew exactly what Hawk did at the Red Pearl. I wanted to kick her. "Like a maiden, of course.
I'm sure playing cards is all he does."
Lauren arched a brow as she pressed her yellow and red fan against the deep blue of her dress. The contrast of the fan and gown was atrocious and also interesting. My gaze dipped to her mask. Crystals of every color were already sewn into the material. I was sure it would look like a rainbow had vomited all over her face once she finished.
"If that is all he does, then that would be a disappointment. I imagine he does what everyone does when they go there," Tawny said, humor dripping like syrup from her words. "Find someone to spend quality time with."
Her mischievous gaze slid to mine. I was going to replace the sugars Tawny loved to dump into her coffee with coarse salt. She knew I wouldn't chime in, that I couldn't. I wasn't allowed to speak to the ladies, and I still hadn't spoken to Hawk or around him. And other than Hawk asking if I wished to do anything after supper last night, to which I had shaken my head no, he hadn't spoken to me either. Like before, I wasn't sure if I was relieved or disappointed.
"You shouldn't suggest such things in current company," Daphina suggested.
Tawny choked on her tea, and behind the veil my eyes rolled.
"I imagine if Miss Willow were alive today, she would have snared him in her web,"
Lauren said, and my interest was piqued. Was she talking about the Willow Collins?
"And then
wrote about him in her diary.
She was. Miss Willa Collins was a woman who'd lived in Macedonia some 200 years ago. She'd apparently had a very active love life.
Miss Collins had detailed her rather scandalous affairs quite explicitly in her journal, and it had been filed away in the city Athenaeum as some sort of historical account. I made a mental note to ask Tawny to retrieve that journal for me. I heard that she only wrote about her most skilled partners. Daphina whispered with a giggle. So, if he made it onto those pages, you know what that means. I did know what that meant. Because of him. My gaze drifted to where Hawk stood, the black breeches and tunic molded to his body like a second skin, and I couldn't blame Daphina or Lauren for how their gazes seemed to find their way back to him every couple of minutes. He was tall, with lean muscle, and the sheathed sword at his waist along with the one at his side said he was prepared for more than just fainting ladies. The white mantle of the royal guard was a new addition, draped over the back of his shoulders. But he also filled the air with a certain type of unquantifiable tension, as if the room were electrified. Anyone around him had to be aware of that. My gaze drifted over his chest, and the memory of how hard it had felt, even without the armor, sent heat creeping into my cheeks. A newly familiar heaviness settled in my chest, making the silk of my dress feel coarse against my suddenly sensitive and flushed skin. Maybe one of those stupid fans would be useful. Swallowing a groan, I wanted to smack myself in the face. But since that wasn't exactly an option, I took a sip of my tea, trying to ease the inexplicable dryness in my throat, and focused on Daphina and Lauren once more. They were talking about the rite, their excitement a heady hum. The celebration was just a week away, on the night of the harvest moon. Their excitement was infectious. With it being my first rite, I would be there, masked and not in white. Most would have no idea that I was the maiden. Well, the two guards who were sure to be with me at all times would probably give me away to those paying attention. Still, a thrill of anticipation-laced uncertainty curled its way through me as my gaze slowly ticked its way back to Hawk. My stomach tumbled. If he saw me in the mask, would he know I was the one who'd been in the room with him? Would that even matter? By the time of the rite, he would have to know I was one and the same, wouldn't he? If he hadn't realized it already. He stood with feet shoulder width apart, his gaze on our little group. The sunlight almost seemed drawn to him, caressing his cheekbones and brow like a lover. His profile was flawless, the line of his jaw as chiseled as the statues that adorned the garden and the castle foyer.
You know that it has to mean that he's near, Lauren was saying. Prince Castile.
My head snapped in her direction in shock. I had no idea what she was talking about or how the subject had come up, but I couldn't believe she had actually spoken his name aloud. My lips parted. No one other than the dissenters would dare utter his actual name, and I doubted that any of them would even speak it in the castle. It was treasonous to call him a prince. He was the Dark One. Daphina was frowning. Because of the... She glanced at me, her brows knitted. Because of the attack? It was only then that I realized they must have been talking about the attempted kidnapping while I'd been... Well, while I'd been doing exactly what they had been doing earlier, staring and thinking about Hawk.
Besides that,
Lauren returned to threading a blood-red crystal to her mask.
I overheard Britta saying so this morning.
The maid, Daphina huffed.
Yes, the maid.
The dark-haired lady in wait lifted her chin.
They know everything.
Daphina laughed. Everything? She nodded as she lowered her voice.
People speak about anything in front of them,
no matter how intimate or private. It's almost like they are ghosts in a room. There's nothing they don't overhear.
Lauren had a point. I'd seen it myself with the Duchess and the Duke.
What did Britta say?
Tawny placed her cup on the table. Lauren's dark eyes flicked to me and then moved back to Tawny.
She said that Prince Castile had been spotted in Three Rivers, that it was he who started the fire that took Duke Everton's life.
How could anyone claim that? Tawny demanded. No one who has ever seen the Dark One will speak of what he looks like, or has lived long enough to give any description of him.
I don't know about that, argued Dafina. I heard from Ramsay that he is bald and has pointy ears and is pale, just like, you know what.
I resisted the urge to snort. Atlanteans looked just like us.
Ramsay, one of His Grace's stewards.
Tawny arched a brow. I should have stated how could anyone credible claim that.
Britta claims that the few who've seen Prince Castile say he's actually quite handsome.
Lauren added.
Oh, really?
Mused Dafina. Lauren nodded as she knotted the crystal to her mask.
She said that was how he gained access to Goldcrest Manor.
Her voice dropped.
That Duchess Everton developed a relationship of a physical nature with him without realizing who he was. And that was how he was able to move freely through the manor.
Britta sure talked a lot, didn't she?
Nearly all of what she says turns out to be true.
Lauren shrugged as she worked an emerald green crystal beside the red.
So, she could be right about Prince Castile.
You should really stop saying that name, Tawny advised. If someone overhears you, you'll be sent to the temples faster than you can say, I knew better.
Lauren's laugh was light. I'm not worried. I'm not foolish enough to say such things where I can be overheard. And I doubt anyone present will say anything.
Her gaze flicked to me, brief but knowing. She knew I couldn't say a word because I'd have to explain how I was even a part of the conversation. Which, for the record, I wasn't. I was just sitting here.
What? What if he was actually here?
Lauren gave a delicate shudder.
In the city, now. What if that was how he gained access to Castle Tierman?
Her eyes lit up.
Befriended someone here, or perhaps even poor Melissa?
You don't sound all that concerned by the prospect. Tawny picked up her cup. To be blunt, you sound excited.
Excited? No. Intrigued? Possibly.
She lowered the mask to her lap, sighing.
Some days are just so dreadfully dull.
The shock of her statement caused me to forget who I was and where I was. All that I managed to do was keep my voice low when I spoke. So a good old rebellion may liven things up for you. Dead men and women and children are a source of entertainment? Surprise flickered across both her and Dafina's faces. It was probably the first time either had ever heard me speak. Lauren swallowed.
I suppose I might have misspoken, maiden. I apologize.
I said nothing.
Please ignore Lauren, pleaded Dafina. Sometimes she speaks without any thought and means nothing by it.
Lauren nodded emphatically, but I didn't doubt that she'd meant exactly what she said. A rebellion would break up the monotony of her day, and she hadn't thought of the lives affected or lost because she simply hadn't cared to. It happened then, once more without any warning, causing my body to jerk forward and my spine to stiffen. My gift reached out on its own, and before I even realized it was happening, that invisible link formed between Lauren and me. A sensation came through the connection, a mixture that reminded me of fresh air on a warm day, and then something acrid, like bitter melon. I focused on the sensations as my heart thumped against my ribs. They felt like
excitement and fear, as Lauren stared at me as if she wished to say something additional. But that couldn't be what I was picking up on from Lauren. It didn't make any sense. Those emotions had to be coming from me, and somehow influencing my gift. Daphina grabbed her friend's arm. Come, we should be on our way. Not given much choice, Lauren was hauled out of her seat and quickly escorted out of the room with Daphina whispering in her ear.
I think you scared them,
Tawny said. Lifting a trembling hand, I took a quick sip of the sweet lemon drink. I had no idea what had just happened.
Poppy?
Tawny touched my arm lightly.
Are you okay?
I nodded as I carefully placed the cup down.
Yes, I'm just... How could I explain it?
Tawny didn't know much about the gift, but even if she did, I wasn't sure I could have put it into words, or be sure that anything had actually happened. I looked over at her and opened my senses. Like at first with Daphina and Lauren, all I felt was a twinge of sorrow, no deep pain or anything I shouldn't be feeling. My heart slowed and my body relaxed. I sat back, wondering if it was just stress causing my gift to behave so oddly. Tawny stared at me, concern creeping into her expression.
I'm okay, I told her, still keeping my voice low. I just can't believe what Lauren said.
Neither can I, but she's always been amused by the most morbid things. Like Daphina said, she means nothing by it.
I nodded, thinking that whether or not she meant anything by it didn't exactly matter. I took another sip of the drink, relieved to find that my hand wasn't trembling. Feeling measurably more normal, I chalked up the weirdness to stress and lack of sleep. My thoughts returned to the Dark One. He would be behind the attacks and might very well be after me, but none of that meant he was actually within the city.
However, if he were,
unease trickled through me as I thought about Goldcrest Manor. It wasn't impossible for something like that to happen here, especially considering an Atlantean and a dissenter had already infiltrated the castle grounds.
What are you going to do?
Tawny whispered. About the Dark One possibly being in the city? I replied, confused.
What? No.
She squeezed my arm.
About him.
Him? I glanced at Hawk.
Yes, him.
Sighing, she let go of my arm.
Unless there is another guy you've made out with while your identity was concealed?
Yes, there are many. They have an actual club. I replied dryly as she rolled her eyes. There's nothing for me to do.
Have you even spoken to him?
She tapped her chin, glancing at him.
No.
She tilted her head. You do realize you will have to actually speak in front of him at some point.
I'm speaking right now,
I pointed out, even though I knew that wasn't what she'd meant. Her eyes narrowed.
You're whispering, Poppy. I can barely hear you. You can hear me just fine,
I told her. She looked as if she wanted to kick me under the table again.
I have no idea how you haven't confronted him yet. I understand the risks involved, but I would have to know if he recognized me. And if he did, why hasn't he said anything?
It's not like I don't want to know,
I glanced at Hawk.
But there's...
I stiffened as Hawk's gaze connected with mine and held. He was looking straight at me, and even though I knew he couldn't see my eyes, it still felt like he could. There was no way he could hear Tawny and me, not from where he stood and with as quietly as I was speaking. But his stare was piercing, as if he could see not only through me, but into me. I tried to brush off the sensation, but the longer he held my gaze, the more the feeling increased. It had to be his eyes and their color, such a strange, stunning golden hue. One could imagine all sorts of things while staring into those eyes. He broke eye contact, pivoting toward the entryway. My breath left me in a ragged exhale. my heart hammering as if I were running across the rise once more.
That was intense, Tawny murmured.
I blinked, giving a shake of my head as I turned to her.
What?
That. Her brows were lifted.
You and Hawk staring one another down? And no, I can't see your eyes, but I knew you two were engaged in a rather heated one-on-one there.
I could feel warmth creep into my cheeks.
He's just doing his job, and I just lost track of what I was saying.
Tawny lifted her brow.
Is that so? Of course.
I smoothed my hands over the lap of my dress.
So he was just making sure you're still alive and
breathing? Hawk suggested, startling both of us. He stood a mere foot from where we sat, having moved with the stealth of a trained guard and the quiet of a ghost. Since I am responsible for keeping her alive, making sure she's breathing would be a priority. My shoulders stiffened. How much had he overheard? Tawny made a poor attempt to smother her giggle with a napkin.
I'm relieved to hear that.
If not, I'd be remiss in my duty, would I not?
Yes. Your duty?
She lowered her napkin.
Between protecting Poppy with your life and limb and gathering spilled crystals, you are very busy.
Don't forget, assisting weak ladies in wait to the nearest chair before they faint, he suggested.
Those strange, mesmerizing eyes glinted with a hint of mischief, and I was as transfixed with him as I'd been with the ladies in wait. This was the Hawk I'd met in the Red Pearl, a well of pain hidden behind a teasing and charming personality.
I'm a man of many talents.
I'm sure you are,
Tawny replied with a grin, while I fought the urge to reach out with my senses. His gaze flicked to her, and the dimple in his right cheek appeared.
Your faith in my skills warms my heart, he said, glancing at me.
Poppy. My eyes widened behind the veil as I clamped my mouth shut. Tawny sighed.
It's her nickname. Only her friends call her that, and her brother.
Ah, the one who lives in the capital,
he questioned, still looking at me. I nodded.
Poppy,
he repeated in a way that made it sound as if my name was wrapped in chocolate and would roll off his tongue.
I like it.
I gave him a tight smile to match how the muscles in my lower stomach suddenly felt.
Is there a threat of stray crystals we need to be aware of? Or is there something you need, Hawk?
Tawny asked.
There are many things I'm in need of,
he replied, as his gaze slid back to me. Tawny tipped forward as if she couldn't wait to hear what those things were.
But we'll need to discuss that later. You've been summoned by the Duke, Penelope. I'm to escort you to him at once.
Tawny grew so very still I wasn't sure if she took another breath.
Ice drenched my insides.
Summoned by the Duke so quickly after yesterday? I knew it wasn't for idle conversation. Did Lord Mazin make good on his threat and go to the Duke? Or was it because of how I'd stared back at the Duke and smiled when I was unveiled? Had he found out that I had stabbed the man who attempted to kidnap me? While most would celebrate that I'd been able to thwart the abduction, Duke Tierman would focus solely on the fact that I'd been carrying a dagger. Could someone have seen me in here and already reported back to him? Had he found out about the Red Pearl?